time is drawing near. Brother, sister,
welcome to Bending the Arc. Bending the Arc is an offering of the Shasta Equal Justice Coalition in partnership with this radio station, KKRN, community-supported radio out of Round Mountain, Bella Vista, and also Redding, California. I'm your host, Sharon Brizolera, and today we'll be speaking with Stephanie Valencia, who is a foundational member of the Social Justice Sewing Academy. We'll be referring to it as SJSA. They have a number of projects that you'll learn about, including a remembrance banner project that the SAJC will be hosting in Shasta County at the Arts Council in November. So I welcome you to this conversation, and note that we're going to be connecting again with a theme that we've been addressing: the role of creative and artistic expression in moving the needle on social justice issues. We're glad you're here.
I believe in being ready, for the time is drawing near.
Welcome, Stephanie, to Bending the Arc. Thank you so much for coming on the show with us.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to come on and introduce SJSA and some of the work that we do.
Great. So I usually start, you know, our conversations with having people introduce themselves in whatever they feel is most important for grounding our discussion.
Okay. So, I am Stephanie, and I take on many roles at SJSA. So one of the really unique things about SJSA as an organization is that it is purely volunteer run and funded. So everyone who participates in SJSA plays their part, but they do so through a donation of their time, energies, and talents, which means that when you have a couple demographics, you have a lot of working professionals. So sometimes, you know, it can be a little hard to get things planned, but because, like, you know, personally, I work about 50 hours a week. Sarah works about 50 hours a week, and so do a lot of the individuals that participate in SJSA. So I always like to point that out, because that is something that makes the project really unique and special, is that it's really everybody coming together with their time, talents, and energies. And I guess I would like to say, like, I'm a very person-centered individual, where in my daily work in nonprofit organizations and those things, I really like to pour into the people that we help and that we support.
Yeah, well, that is really helpful. I've been on a number of all-volunteer boards, small organizations, but what you all seem to accomplish that we're going to get to in our conversation is quite impressive in terms of the things you support. So that's really great information for people to know. Why don't we jump into what the Social Justice Sewing Academy is and does, and then I'll circle back to some of your involvement in it.
Yeah, so SJSA, or the Social Justice Sewing Academy, is a nonprofit organization that uses textiles as a catalyst for change. So we work with youth, primarily youth to young adults, who want to change the world and have a lot of, you know, views, and a lot of them have gone through a lot of traumas. So we come in and we teach workshops that center around social justice topics, such as what is power and who holds the power? What is identity? Help individuals recognize the different forms of identity and the cross sections of that. We talk about environmentalism. We talk about the criminal justice system and the need for reform, drug use, domestic violence, save the sea turtles. Like, there are so many different things that are social justice topics. And then each youth will choose something that they identify with. And then they create a textile block that discusses what it is that they want to share with the world. So a unique thing about that is that you can really tell a lot about where a workshop was held when a quilt comes together. So we will work in like very affluent schools, and we get a lot of save the sea turtles. The ice caps are melting. The polar bears are going to die.
Mm-hmm.
We get some like domestic violence things. We get a lot of like religion, like everyone should be able to have whatever religion they want. We get a lot of female rights, things such as abortion rights, stop school dress codes, stop sexualizing female bodies in your more affluent schools. And then you go into a workshop that's held in Baltimore, that's held in downtown Oakland, that's held in Chicago, and you get a lot of blocks that are about gangs, about police violence, about the misuse of authority, school shootings, all those different types of things. So it's just very interesting that you can kind of tell the demographic of youth that you've worked with based on the finished quilt. But overall, what we do is we go in and we give these youth a voice so that they can share with the world what they want, believe in, and what they would like to see change.
So typically you have some training or education on the topics that you mentioned before, and then from that discussion, youth are able to be guided in how to make a quilt block, essentially. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah, and I know that I was first introduced to the SJSA through a quilter, who also heads our probation department, who had learned about you. And we had both solicited blocks. And so I know adults, I'm usually considered an adult, can participate at a distance in those efforts. Can you talk a little bit about that outreach?
Yes. So we've created pretty much an intergenerational sewing circle.
Mm.
And so the youth will make this art. The youth are the ones who are talking about the problems. They're the ones sharing with the world their struggles and their traumas and the things that they experience and fear, and the things that they're passionate about. And then we send them off to, we have a literal army of embroidery volunteers. so many from Australia, the US, Canada, everywhere.
Wow.
So we send them to an adult of an embroidery volunteer who has the time and the money to put forth the energy that embroidering these blocks takes. So the embroidery volunteer will like write the message on the block. They'll embellish it. They'll make it look really nice because the youth just glue it down. And the embroidering volunteers will sit with this block, and they're sent the artist statement or a note about what the block is supposed to mean. And a lot of the feedback that we get is that, well, they're sitting there for 20 hours embroidering this block and inscribing this message. They're really left having to ponder the message that is on this block. Because not only is it intergenerational, but it also crosses a lot of class lines. So people who have 20 hours to devote to embroidering a block in 20 different colors of embroidery floss generally have a more affluent background. They generally have not faced a lot of the traumas or seen a lot of the things that these youth who are making the blocks have faced. So, you know, their feedback is like, as we sit with this message, it really just blows our mind that a 12-year-old is worrying about their brother overdosing or you know, has seen one of their friends be shot, that kind of thing. So it kind of helps other people who don't have those same experiences emphasize and gain knowledge about some of the different things that are happening in the world that they don't necessarily experience themselves.
Mm.
So that's one way. And then after the embroidery comes back, we have sew days over here in Vacaville. And we have about 20 sewers who come together on the second Sunday of every month, and they sew the quilt together. Mm-hmm. So they do all the piecing, and then it goes to a long armor. So by the time a quilt is finished, there's been probably about 60 different individuals who have touched this quilt beginning to end.
Wow.
So that's, you know, 60 messages, 60 people impacted. So that's one of the amazing things about our community quilts. We also have an adult project, two adult projects. So one of them is the Remembrance Banners, which are going to be hosted by your organization.
Mm-hmm.
And that one was created by youth for adults to be involved. So when COVID hit, we pretty much shut down in a lot of ways. We weren't able to go into schools anymore. We weren't able to go into jails anymore. The libraries weren't hosting 20 kid workshops. And the kids that are youth ambassadors were kind of like, okay, well, how do we continue to spread this message? So one of them had gone somewhere and saw the AIDS quilt, and they came back and they're like, can you tell me why we're not doing something for the people who have been murdered? Like, who's out there saying their names? Who's remembering them? So they wanted to make an AIDS quilt. And we're like, okay, well, you know, those things are huge. Like, what can we do to make this a more digestible project? So we started a list of individuals who have lost their lives to some form of racial or systematic violence. And then we had people who were interested in the Social Justice Sewing Academy sign up if they wanted to. And we randomly assigned names because we didn't want to put any more weight in one person than the other, because we didn't want people fighting over, well, you know, George Floyd right now is a big name.
Mm-hmm.
Or things like that. So everybody just got a random name, and they had to do some research into that individual. And so each remembrance banner has two blocks on it, and each block commemorates the life of a different individual.
Mm-hmm.
And so those ones, that's our remembrance banners. And then we're doing remembrance quilts as well. So another youth said, how come veterans get a quilt? Or the families of veterans get a quilt? And we're like, I don't know. They're like, well, do you think the people who volunteer for us will want to make quilts for the families of people who have been murdered?
Oh.
So we put it out there. We did a lot of interviews with different families. Families sent us their loved ones' clothing, pictures. And any person who wants to, they don't have to be, you know, already involved with SJSA, can sign up to take on one of these projects, and they'll receive the clothing or the special things from the individual who was murdered, and then they can make a quilt for the family out of those items.
That sounds really powerful, both in the creation and the sharing.
Mm-hmm. So we've done quilts for several families. One of the things that we have come across is that, you know, a lot of the families didn't necessarily hold on to their clothing, but that's okay, because we can also, you know, the volunteer can buy fabric, use fabric, print out pictures onto the fabric. There's a lot of different ways that can be done.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to circle back to the Remembrance Project. I have several questions about that. But to go back to the community quilts, what happens to a community quilt when it's completed? Or do you have any on public display? Tell us the story about some possibilities of what might happen with those.
Yeah, so the Community Quilt Project is our biggest one because we work with the youth a lot, and you can really sum up a lot of what's happening in the world in those 20 different blocks. But after they're finished, we rent them out to different organizations, and that helps to fund the creation of more quilts. And so, like, I do a lot of community outreach. I'll email galleries, I'll email museums, quilt shows, and all of that, and see if they're interested in hosting any of the quilts.
Mm.
So it's, they're like traveling exhibitions, and we allow the museum to like curate what they like based on their demographic, because we do have some quilts that are, you know, a little bit more PG in a lot of ways than other ones, or, you know, aren't, some of the quilts have really obscene pieces of art or things like that, because we don't censor the youth. We feel that it's extremely important for them to tell their story through that art without an adult coming in and saying that this is wrong or this is too in your face or too radical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's clear that a lot of intentionality about the discussions and how youth are engaged has gone into the Community Quilt Project. Do you know when it started, and was that the sort of the flagship project for the Sewing Justice Social Academy?
Yeah, so it started in 2017 officially. So that's when Sarah was able to get it as a nonprofit. But when she kind of started it a little bit, when she got a grant from Berkeley, she was able to do like a sewing workshop with some youth over the summer. And it just kind of, you know, went from there. But 2017 is the official.
Mm-hmm. And when did you get involved, and how? What drew you to the project?
I'm not even 100% sure of the year that I fully got involved. I want to say something like 2018. So it was actually quite by accident that I became involved. So I lived in Utah at the time, and I had gone to the convention center for a show that was being held there. And oh, I can't even remember what it was, but I accidentally went into the wrong one. And I was like, oh, these are some cool, why am I in this quilt show? So I started walking around and I saw these really powerful quilts about social justice art, and coming from a state that is extremely conservative, lacks diversity, it was something that I recognized that the world needed, especially in a place where I was at the time. That idea of unlearning and teaching a different, a more accurate history. So Sarah was there, and I started talking to her, and I was like, look, let me tell you what I learned in Utah's educational system, because we need you. And she's like, well, I'm in California. I can't really be in Utah all the time. But if you want to like read some books and learn a little bit more about, you know, these areas of history that you're telling me that you need to unlearn from the education system, like, feel free to do that. And then we can collab and work together. And it's just been smooth sailing since then.
And you're still in Utah?
No, I'm in California now.
Oh, you're in California now. But you were initially.
Yes.
Wow. If you're just joining us, this is Bending the Arc on KKRN, and we're speaking with Stephanie Valencia of the Social Justice Sewing Academy, or SJSA. Yeah, that is fascinating. And so, you know, you've kind of shared just a little bit of your experience walking into that space. What have you heard about other people's experience of walking into a showing of community quilts? Or do you gather data about that?
So we don't gather actual data. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you that other people's experience greatly differs on where our show is and the demographic that attends that show.
Mm-hmm.
So like PIQF, which is a pretty modern and liberal quilt show, were very well received. There's tons of positive feedback.
And what is that, the PIQF?
Yes.
What does that stand for?
Pacific International Quilters. I'm not sure what that
something,
is.
Something. Yeah. Yeah. That's enough. That gives me some context. Yeah.
So, I mean, that one's out here in San Jose, very well received. When we go to QuiltCon, which is the biggest quilt show that's held every year, it's revolving throughout different states of the country. Mm-hmm. We're really well received there. Anything that's MQG, Modern Quilt Guild, very well received. But I can tell you personally that I have been to several shows, and I remember Sarah telling me that we're not always well received. And that was something that I had a hard time wrapping my mind around, because it's kid art. Mm-hmm. Like, how can something 12-year-olds made be so threatening and draw so much hatred? Like, I could not wrap my mind around it. But I personally went to Road to California, which was in Ontario one time. And the people were just like, why would you have these people up? They're trash. And just like talking horrible things about the individuals who had been murdered in the banners. I've gone to quilt shows and Sarah will like sit on a bench and people will get up and just move because they don't want to sit by her. And I'm like, I have never seen such blatant racism. So I think it really just depends on the space that we're in. But for the most part, it's fairly positive. We did have a really negative experience that led to a huge project that SJSA took on. We were at the National Quilt Museum and they do the block of the month. So they asked Sarah to present a block of the month, and it was just a simple block. It's a pencil and an eraser, and it's erasing the letters IN in front of inequality. So erase inequality to create equality. You know, a pretty safe block. And I cannot tell you how many people lost their minds and just started like saying really horrible things. And then the kid who designed the block was really upset. And he's like, why do people not like my block? So it created the like, block of the month movement that SJSA did to make your own quilts. So, you know, out of controversy, we always do find light and create new projects. But overall, to answer your question, the way it's received really depends on who's hosting and the demographic that attend that show.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting because I didn't have a very clear, visual of some of the community blocks, which, as you say, can range, right, in topics. But I was thinking about controversies that might be connected to the remembrance banners. And to talk to our listeners who don't know you yet about the range of people that are represented in the remembrance banners, it can be people who have experienced kind of domestic or interpersonal violence, that it was racially motivated or by sexual orientation, or folks who have been died at the hands of law enforcement. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes. So we have categories. And if you go to the showing, you'll be able, the audience will be able to see them. So every banner in the corner has a colored piece. So we have, if you see the individual with a blue piece of sashing on their banner, that means that they lost their lives to someone in an authoritative position. So that could be police, that could be correctional guard, something around law enforcement, but to the hands of someone who had authority over them. Mm-hmm. If you see a piece of purple sashing, that means that the individual lost their lives in some form of domestic violence situation or due to their sexuality or gender. And then we have this like greenish yellow. We can't decide if it's green or yellow. Mm-hmm. All your listeners will have to do a survey and let me know what they believe. But that means that that individual lost their lives due to some form of community violence. So that could be just a 10-year-old who's sitting on the porch and is a victim of a drive-by. It could be, you know, someone who was murdered by another community member. But basically the person who took their life was someone who was just a regular member of the community. And then you have orange. And orange is due to some form of racial hate crime or religious hate crime.
Mm-hmm. That doesn't fall within one of the other categories.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a broad range, and you can submit any person's name to SJSA, and then it just goes on to the list of individuals who we need to assign out. So that is one thing, a call to all your listeners. We are always looking for artists, textile artists, anyone who wants to take on making one of these blocks. Our list is ever growing, and we do not have enough volunteers to really even make a dent in the amount of names that are submitted.
Mm-hmm. And how do you decide whether you'll be taking on a name, or do you just go by with what the information that people submit? How does that work?
Yeah. So an individual can submit a name to SJSA, and then either Sarah or I or another volunteer will kind of do a little bit of research on that individual, just to make sure that they fit the criteria for the project.
Mm-hmm. And when you've decided if they fit the criteria, they've been nominated, is there any interaction with families about them being represented, or does that come later when a quilter is connected, or is it not, is that not an issue for the remembrance banners?
So that hasn't been an issue for us so far. The families that have reached out are very much in love with the project. They love, first of all, that we're not selling the product. So that tends to be an issue when people use the names of someone who's died, is the profitability. So when we do the remembrance banners, unlike our community quilts and things like that, we do not charge any hosting fees for those.
Mm-hmm.
And that we do ask that wherever they're on display, that specific specific showing be free. If we do find out that it's not free, then we ask like the organization to make sure that they sponsor some form of like free days or things like that. But overall, I think most organizations realize that when they're getting a display for free, that it should be like free viewing to the public.
Absolutely.
So we're not profiting off their death. We do charge like for the shipping reimbursement and things like that, just because as a nonprofit org, we're not able to sustain that cost. And since everything is made and donated by volunteers, you know, that it's a pretty minimal cost with that. And then also we're honoring the individual. But I think overall, like I said, we don't have those complaints because there's no profiting off of the individual's name. We have, you know, had that family interaction where they'll be like, hey, we're hosting like a remembrance thing at the park for my loved one. And we'll be like, okay, great. We can send the banner and some other ones. So overall, it's meant to be an overarching community project where it's displayed in different communities to draw awareness.
Mm-hmm. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Bending the Arc on KKRN Community Supported Radio, and Stephanie Valencia of the Social Justice Sewing Academy. And right now we're talking about the Remembrance Banners. So yeah, we are very excited at the SCJC to be hosting the Remembrance Banners. And I've really appreciated your overview as we've talked before this about the power that there can be in seeing so many banners. And I believe you'll be sending us 30 banners, which have, is it two or four on each banner?
It's two.
Two. And the Shasta Arts Council has been a great partner. And of course, it will be free for everyone. We are looking at sponsors so that we can have some additional events there, some reflection spaces, some activities that people can join, some materials, things like that. You spoke earlier about some of the controversy, and I'm wondering if, in your experience so far, there's been more controversy around the banners that depict violence or death by authority figures. Is that the segment that gets the most, I don't know if it's pushback or concern?
I don't really think so. Mm. I think that because of the way that we design the banners, there isn't really a way to pinpoint the specific category that gets the pushback. So we don't segregate it in a way. Like, so we don't put people who lost their lives to community violence only with people who lost their lives to community violence. Mm-hmm. So you might have like an Isaiah Lewis right next to an individual who was murdered by her boyfriend because she broke up with him. Mm-hmm. So the banners are all mixed topics. So when the 30 that you have, you might end up with five individuals who lost their lives to some form of authoritative violence, eight that lost their lives to domestic violence, three that were murdered because they were transgender. You might end up with two kids and the rest of them be victims of drive-bys.
Mm-hmm.
So because of that mixture, I think when people view them, they recognize that they don't necessarily agree with the message, but there's not just like a specific section of the banner display that they can go to and be like, oh, I don't like these people.
Oh, so when you say that they may not agree with the message, like if the quilt block on the banner itself has a particular message? Well,
when I say the message, so a lot of times when they're displayed, the organization, the museum, whoever's hosting will type up a message about what they're for and the meanings behind them. So as the individuals like read what these banners represent, they might not necessarily agree because, you know, unfortunately there is a lot of victim blaming in society. There is a lot of homophobia, transphobia. There's a lot of misogyny. So, you know, a lot of individuals don't agree with the overall message of what we're trying to send. It's rare that you hear people specifically pinpoint like, oh, this person, you know, I remember them. Like that's George Floyd there. He deserved it or anything like that. That's not really what you hear. You hear more disagreement in the mission of the project, the honoring the individuals that they don't feel are worthy of being honored.
And how, I mean, I can think about for us, our reasons for wanting to have a reflective space about these folks. How does SJSA talk about the mission or your purpose in having these banners and displaying them for communities to see?
So I think the easiest way to sum that up is to facilitate conversation around critical topics in every community, in every class bracket, to every demographic possible. Our overall mission is to get this message out that people are dying. People are dying constantly. They are having their lives stolen from them due to these systems of inequality. So I think, you know, that's one of the ways that we talk about it. And also, as a project of honor and remembrance, you know, hence the name, the Remembrance Project, but it's really about honoring the lives, because too often in the media, on the news, you hear so much about the person's death. So both of our remembrance projects are honoring and remembering the lives of the individual. So when you look at the banners, you'll see things like we have, I can't remember his name, but he was a fireman who was murdered. And, you know, in the back of the banner, you'll see like a fire truck. If someone was just barely graduating, and you'll see like a tassel from a graduation hat. The people who volunteer for this, like, really do a lot of research around the people as much as possible. We have people who have been able to find out an individual's favorite color, their favorite song, these different types of things, and they incorporate them into these banners. So it's really about celebrating their life. As well as if you look into the book, Stitching Stolen Lives, that Sarah wrote, that goes along with the remembrance banners and the remembrance quilts, the interviews that we did with the family are a celebration of life. There's very little mention about their death, because we really wanted to change that focus to that celebration of who they were.
Mm. Yeah, that's a very important distinction. And to go back to the people who are resistant, it sounds like they don't want to celebrate particular lives if there's victim blaming. And on the other side, there are people who, along with whatever you might want to do to rectify or repair the inequalities that you see, there's a desire to remember and celebrate people whose lives were cut short. Is that a fair way of putting it? What kinds of conversations do you all hope emerge from your average, I know it depends, viewing of the remembrance banners? And do you suggest guiding those conversations with topics or prompts?
So I think some prompts, like, depends on how they're displayed, but if the display is like a long hallway or it's almost maze-like where there's a starting point and an endpoint, I think it's helpful to have some large signage that has some different prompts. And it can just be simple things like, which banners resonated with you? In what ways did they resonate? Is this because you have or share some of the identities? And just like different questions that surround identity, as well as like what do you hope to learn? And then like also like a prompt to like a challenge of, we challenge you to look up and learn a little bit about one person's name that you didn't recognize.
Those are great questions. You're listening to Bending the Arc on KKRN, Community Supported Radio. And this is a conversation with Stephanie Valencia of the Social Justice Sewing Academy, talking about remembrance banners and the experience of viewing those. in the community. So, you know, one of the things, as we've talked on this show about a number of different approaches for having conversations, and we talked to law enforcement, a really wide range of people, but we've had quite a few sessions about the role of art and creative expression in walking people into difficult or challenging conversations, or the types of reflections that we might otherwise resist. And I'm wondering what you have seen or learned about people who might not pick up a book about violence, or might not have been inclined to go to a presentation or a workshop about some of the issues that are addressed in the banners. What you have seen about people who come to and view the quilts, about how it affects them, or what some of the, I don't know, outcomes might be of that experience.
So we get a lot of feedback, at least when I'm at a show and Sarah's at a show, if we have somebody on the ground there that's willing to walk people through and just kind of watch and read their body language. And it doesn't have to be an SJSA person. It could be like a curator, a quilt bouncer. Sorry, a quilt bouncer. Everyone laughs at me that I call them quilt bouncers, but the little white glove people that, you know, make sure nobody touches the quilts. It could be anybody. But if they're versed in what the meanings behind the banners are and are able to read the room well, and pop in with just a little bit of information here or there, it's a lot, there's a lot more impact than just a typical viewing where people just kind of walk through. So I would say that the banners do tend to resonate with people who aren't necessarily criminal justice versed because of the vast identities in which we celebrate. So everybody in, well, almost everybody, but most people in one way or another can identify with at least one person. So you're going to be hosting 30 banners. Out of those 60 people, they're going to identify in some way, somehow, with one of those individuals. That could be, you know, they have a grandchild that's around the age of a little girl that's on there. Mm-hmm. It could be that their sister was a victim of domestic violence in some way. There's so many different people on there who have lived so many different lives that if they just do a little bit of research or recognize what the project really means, that it resonates well because we all identify with somebody in one way or another.
Mm-hmm. What have you seen are some good ways to work with those thoughts or feelings that emerge? You know, what kinds of actions, what ways do people sort of metabolize, you know, those conversations or thoughts? You know, you mentioned before inviting people to make quilt blocks, but I'm guessing there's a range of things that people could do.
Yeah, so one of the ways that people can really kind of jump in and digest is they can follow us on the social media, the at SJSA Academy on Instagram. That's probably our most predominant social media platform. Mm-hmm. And there are thousands of volunteers on there. And there's a lot of active discussions around like the different quilt blocks and the quilts that are posted. There'll be discussions around the different shows that we get pictures from. So that's a good way to come in and be able to ask questions and, you know, get answers from other people that have, you know, maybe been in a similar situation where, hey, I'm kind of new to this social justice thing. I felt very moved and something powerful while viewing this. So creating those spaces for dialogue with other volunteers is important. Also, there are a million different ways that you can get involved with SJSA. So if you are not, you know, I personally don't sew, and I am one of the core members of this team.
Mm.
I make all the food for the sew days. And I reach out to the different museums. So it could be something as simple as networking. Like, hey, my daughter's a teacher. Would you be interested in connecting with her to do a workshop there? Mm-hmm. Or my sister's a librarian. Can I put you in contact? A lot of the shows that we get, a lot of the museum invites, everything like that usually comes from word of mouth. Somebody knows somebody who was like, hey, you should check out this page. And then they reach out to us like, hi, I know somebody who embroiders a block for you. I'm interested in bringing you to my school. Or, hey, I work for a museum. I would love for Sarah to come do a workshop and a keynote. You know, there are so many different ways that you can become involved and to share that message and help to support the mission. I think one of the most important things that some people can do is, you know, speak up. If you're at a show and you see somebody bad-mouthing someone, if you're out in public and you see something, you know, don't be afraid to step in and speak up and, you know, let people know that you're watching and that what they're doing is not right.
Mm. And I'm guessing that over time you've probably inspired people who are creative in other genres to create, you know, poetry or painting or music or film. Do you know about any of those crossovers?
So I would say the largest crossover was with the inequality block, where everybody was making different blocks. So we had some sent to us that were crocheted. We had some that were painted. We had some embroidery ones, some quilted ones, and just a lot of different type of things. And then also, like, if you're good at graphic design, we could always use help making new emblems or new logos. Grant writing. As a nonprofit organization, to have an individual who's a great grant writer, who's willing to volunteer to, one, look for different grants that we qualify for, two, perfect or write grants, those types of things. So there's so many different skills that individuals who want to volunteer can really bring to SJSA. Even if you're not a sewer, if there's a workshop that's being held in your area, you can volunteer to go help the kids cut, because there's never enough time for the kids. They all want to cut out the most amount of things they possibly can. And, you know, some of those younger kids are not that skilled with a set of scissors. So trust me, as somebody who does not know how, I couldn't sew a button if I needed to. There are a million ways that you can get involved. You just have to have the passion to do so.
What motivates you to stay involved?
I think for me, there are so many different things, and I feel like it's ever changing. So like I said, for those of you who didn't hear, I grew up in Utah, which is an extremely conservative, not diverse area at all. And I had to do a lot of unlearning as I became an adult. Like, I grew up hearing that the Black Panthers were terrorists. Mm. And Angela Davis is my role model. Mm. I grew up hearing a lot of, like, assimilation is the only way to be. If you're not willing to assimilate, you're anti-American. Like, the education system that I got was extremely problematic. So I think that's what really kind of drives my passion, is knowing that that curriculum is still out there being taught. Kids these days still are not getting the full story of history.
that schools are still out there putting on feather headbands and playing Indians and pilgrims for Thanksgiving, that there's still schools out there that are teaching that Christopher Columbus was an icon, and not, you know, the horrors and travesties that he inflicted upon the peoples of America. So I think that that's really what drives me, because I want to help people unlearn that inaccurate history.
What's next for the SJSA? Are there, not that you're not, you're doing plenty, and for a all volunteer organization, that's really amazing. But I just want to make sure if there are any kind of events or things that are coming in the future that we share that with people.
Yeah. So one of the newer projects that has been started, and this was actually launched by a volunteer who helps with our SO days. She wanted to start making quilts for individuals with disabilities. So intellectual, physical disabilities that are on the neurodivergent spectrum, because a lot of the individuals, they don't have a support system. They don't have families that are around them. They go from foster homes into group facilities, and they're kind of on their own. So she wanted to have a SO day and to find volunteers who were willing to put together quilts for these individuals so they'd have something that was just theirs, something that had meaning, that was made for them. You know, how many individuals that, you know, have some neurodivergent tendencies, how many of them are really being supported and loved and having homemade gifts that have so much meaning? So she's put together a workshop, and she's going to be hosting it on, I think, the 15th of next month. And what we're going to have happen is we have found a group of neurodivergent individuals that all live in like group facilities. They're going to be brought down by their staff. I think there's 17 of them. This is just our pilot. And they're going to come to Cloth Carousel in Vacaville, where we do our SO days, and they're going to pick out fabrics. They're going to get to choose all the colors for their own quilts, what they like, and then they're going to be assigned a sewer, and the sewer's going to put together this quilt and give it to them as a gift.
That's beautiful. Well, as we wrap up, I've asked you a lot of different questions. Is there anything I should have asked you or that you have been thinking about that you'd like to share as we end our conversation?
So maybe not necessarily should have asked me, but kind of continuing on the topic of unlearning, I just want to let listeners know it's never too late to start your journey of unlearning. You don't have to look at it as, I should have known more sooner. It is not too late to pick up a book, to join our learning groups on Instagram. It's not too late to be involved.
That's a great place to end, Stephanie. Thank you so much for this conversation and for everything that you're doing with the SJSA.
Of course. And I am looking forward to lots of pictures and hearing more about how the remembrance banners go over for you. Really, really looking forward to that.
Yeah, me too. Me too. You've been listening to Bending the Arc on KKRN, community-supported radio out of Round Mountain, Bella Vista, California, and from our Reading office as well. Please feel free to check the archives for more about the SJSA, about the Shasta Equal Justice Coalition, or how you can donate to this station or any of those organizations. And thank you for all you do.
Who are you? What have you become? What have you done to this beautiful kingdom? I don't want your guns. I don't want your poisons. I don't want your weapons and tools of mass distractions. I don't want your red flags. Don't want your baggage. I don't want your hate speech, your supremacy. Where are your wives? Where is your rough edge? Don't tell me you've traded it for comfort and privilege. I don't want your fast foods. I don't need to buy shit. I don't want your miles and miles of advertisement. I don't want it, no, no, no. So step up, speak out, show up, be loud. 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 Of the pie, 9 to 5 living in a plastic empire. Where is the house for the wounded and homeless? Can't sleep on the streets, can't afford to own this. Everything is I, me, me, my, mine. Busy working for the dollar while the well runs dry. Minimum wages, maximum security. Simple pleasure traded for business and authority.